Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I want to welcome all of you to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and I want to, first of all, apologize to everyone that came to the Revolution Radio simulcast last Sunday, because I really think the technical problem we had was really user error on my part, because I don't think you can drag people into the show with Blog Talk Radio on Skype until the show actually starts. I don't know why I forgot that. Anyway, maybe it was just there's my little dog, Wilson. I don't know if you heard that or not, but he's a monster. But let me see if I can drag Barbara DeLong in, just because I upgraded Skype and I assumed that it was a Skype issue. But if I can drag Barbara in, then everything's back to normal. Well, it looks like that's not working either. I'm going to have to get the technical folks on Blog Talk to help me figure this one out. Anyway, that's the issue there. Wow, bummer. You know, never upgrade, I guess, is the moral of the story. I hope you guys can hear me. I think, can you guys in the chat room hear me? That's the next question, I guess. Okay, so it wasn't just user error. There is something going on here. For some reason, I can't drag anyone into the show. I could probably just click Eve's mic button and bring her on the air, but I'm not so sure she wants to chat or not, since she's on my list here. But that's, so there is a technical issue. I'll have to get in touch with the Blog Talk people. There is nobody on the help, Blog Talk help for the techie side, so we're going to have to roll with it. That's really not a problem. I've got an interesting show for you. Actually, I've had so much show information, I feel like I'm almost oozing over. I wanted to talk a little bit this morning about ancient human history, and this goes back to the megalithic structure show I did with Barbara DeLong and Mad Painter and Kosal and Keith Hunter, and going back to what the Meyer material is saying is the galactic human history. And I wanted to read something from a contact Billy had with Askett. And Askett said, Earth humanity has achieved a high standing of technical evolution, however, really only in regard to the technical and that which pertains to a purely material understanding. Their evolution in terms of the spiritual and of the consciousness was, however, until now maliciously disadvantaged and neglected and displaced by the worldly and the material. The result was that many kinds of evil things could grow and degenerate into fanaticism. Well, evidently Valyrians had the same problem in the ancient past in terms of this degenerating into fanaticism when the spiritual was lagging behind the material. Nebula are formed by ionizing gas of a dying star, and in Billy's second contact person, Askett, had much to say about our ancestors that lived in the constellation of Lyra near the Ring Nebula. In Contact 238, it talks about how the Ring Nebula was actually created by a quote-unquote king of wisdom. Ptah refers to the Ring Nebula using the word J-H-W-H Mata. During Billy's trip in the mothership, he described it as a gigantic eye staring at him in space. However, Ptah referred to the Ring Nebula in a negative way. In Contact 238 at line 156, it says, It is for us a symbol of evil lust for power and domination, a symbol of hate, destruction, and human madness, that in contrast to other similar and natural formations, it is the work of a man. Contact 238, line 692, goes on to say, Not only that an Ishwish, god/king of wisdom, created the Ring Nebula in his megalomania, which has since been named the Eye of God, but his most distant descendants finally also came to the earth and terrorize the world here, and so on, which at any rate, as a rough measure, happened essentially for the first time only 389,000 years ago, when one disregards those deportations and conquests and other skirmishes that go back to about 20 million years ago. And in Askett's Explanations Part 1, it says much what we've already said here. Since then, we again explored the expanses of our universe and several centuries ago discovered this solar system and therewith the world, whose inhabitants show a very old connection with the Pleiadians, as you name them for certain reasons, and in which also are involved also in the form which pertains to our mission. To be precise, the centuries by your time reckoning line up together to 33, during which we again were able to travel and explore your universe. Remember, according to Meyer material, 46 trillion years ago, a parallel universe was created called the Tao universe. At the same time our universe was formed, there's a people that now lives in the Tao universe called the Timmers. Askett is one of the Timmers. Askett was Billy's second contact. The Timmers are descended from the Lyrians, as are some of the people of the Earth descended from the Lyrians, as are the Pleiadians / Plearen descended from the Lyrians. Through our incessant explorations, we again found this world, as well as also our original home world, and the very distant descendants of those who, from the earliest times, were the responsible ones who were relevant to the human life of this world, because a portion of the humans of Earth were not born here, and we've talked about this many times on this show. Many are descendants of those who came out of the expanse of outer space, and indeed from that space that you name Lyra and Vega with the Eye of God. In those territories lie namely the real and ultimate original homeland of the later terrestrial human race. I did get a call here. Looks like Barbara's going to join us just for a minute. Hi, Barbara. How are you this morning?
I'm fine. And Skype works from at least the show page to your queue, so I don't know why you can't queue out.
Yeah. It used to, I could just pull people right in. So, and you know, I don't know if you've got a blog talk show, correct?
Yeah.
And the name of your show is?
Nightlight.
Nightlight, right. We've talked before on your show, and I've used Skype on this show, and I'm sure you use Skype on your show.
No, actually, I use the telephone, but Skype appears to be working very, very well here, so I'm not sure what your problem is. Maybe it just doesn't like you.
Oh, it could be, but I used to be able to just, like, drag people right into the show with no problem, but I upgraded Skype,
That's your problem, probably.
Yeah, I had to upgrade Skype. I was forced to upgrade Skype because they literally, my account wouldn't work anymore. And one of the reasons in the help page on Skype is you need to upgrade to a new version. So they kind of force you to, and then, of course, things don't work, or they appear not to work anyway. But that was a wonderful show, Barbara, that we did on ancient megalithic structures.
Yeah, and I sent you some fascinating material on the Grand Canyon stuff, too, so that might be fun to talk about sometime.
Yeah, we will have to do that. And, you know, a lot of the stuff we talked about on that show on ancient megalithic structures was so interesting. We really need to go back over that stuff because I don't think it really sinks in the first time through. At least it doesn't for me.
I've been living and breathing it for years now, but you're absolutely right, because when you start to talk about some of this stuff, more information comes out every time you go over it, so it doesn't ever get old.
I know, and when I was preparing for that show, and I'm usually so focused on the Great Pyramid of Giza, and then when I started looking at some of these other monuments and how incredible they are in terms of not only their size, but just the pure skill of creating these things. You just come away with this understanding of, wow, how could we have not understood how advanced these people had to be?
Oh, absolutely. And just to take the Egyptian thing into the Grand Canyon, those caverns that they found in the Grand Canyon were large enough to accommodate and have live in them 50,000 people.
Wow. And these civilizations, they cut right into the stone.
Well, yeah, and not only that, but it really, they pulled from there and have on exhibit in the Smithsonian gold artifacts that are reminiscent of Akhenaten and his wife. They have hieroglyphs there that show them, and the gold objects were phenomenal. But also there were Buddhist things there, and if anybody wants to look into it on the internet, just Google ancient Egypt in the Grand Canyon, and the photographs of these caves, I mean, they're large enough to hold football stadiums. They're just amazing.
Yeah.
And they did. They had to chisel it, and actually. I don't know why the government has them, you know, off limits, because there must be something in there that is so phenomenal that the government doesn't want us in there, because there is actually a no-fly zone over the entrance to this cave.
Really?
Really?
You can't even You can't even fly your helicopter over it.
Scott Walter of America on Earth tried to, and he was restricted. And they're not able to rappel down because it's actually the level of water has sunk so greatly that the only way in is to rappel down a cliff, and even then it's too far to rappel down. So when it was discovered in 1909, the water level of the river going through there was much higher, but the water level has gotten much lower now, so that you can't even go in from below. So you almost would have to have a hovercraft of some sort to get in there today.
And the government
is not letting anybody in.
When they would cut into these canyon walls, what I thought of is how ingenious that is, because I bet the temperature inside those areas that they cut out is like probably 70 degrees pretty much all year.
Yeah, and it appears that it's been speculated. Now, I mean, the time we're going back now is thousands of years, so it's been speculated that they basically wintered there, and that during the summer they were out foraging and raising crops and things like that. So that the caves are, I mean, the artifacts, some of them have been dated back just so far back that it's amazing. It's totally amazing. And
so
it's
they,
here in this country.
and of course it's covered up.
Mm-hmm.
And those ancient people would stay in these giant caverns that they created in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
It must have been a little warmer in there. I mean, it must have been comfortable in there.
Well, when you stop to think about it, I have in my house, the basement part is sort of half of it is underground and half of it is above ground, and it stays a constant 58 degrees. So I don't have to cool it in the summer or heat it in the winter. It just is,
yeah.
It's constant because it's basically below the frost level.
So just think of all the money we would save. You know, we're spending all this money on air conditioning and we're spending all this money to heat us up in the winter. And then I think that there's bad side effects from heating your house. I think the furnaces, they dry out our sinuses. They make us more susceptible to cold.
Yeah. Absolutely. And the reality is all we need to do is to have a part of our dwelling below the frost level, and it will stay a constant 58 degrees.
My goodness.
And you know, it's cool in the summer. It's warm in the winter. It's toasty in the winter. And it's when I think of the heating bill and the electric bill, and I think all I have to do is really live downstairs and I'd be fine. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. And you know, they have geodesic domes that cost nothing to put up. Have you seen any of these tiny houses that are now becoming, you know, all the vogue? People are moving into these tiny houses of 200, 300, 400 square feet. And, you know, cheaper to heat, cheaper, and you can put them on a trailer and move them if you want to. So our society is shifting and changing greatly, and it's fascinating.
Well, and some of that, I think, is, well, I don't know if you've heard of Agenda 21 and UNESCO and all that, or some of these societal movements or changes that are occurring so rapidly, they concern me, because I think a lot of it is Agenda 21 driven and driven by the powers to be, the elite. They have these, they're planning mega cities. I don't know if you've, what they want to do is herd us all up and round us all up and put us in the mega cities, which are going to be forming. And then the next thing that will happen is automatic cars that drive themselves.
Mm.
So, yeah, and that's going to come in the next couple of years where you won't even be able to drive your own car.
Don't they have one that'll park itself?
Oh, they'll park themselves. Well, you know, I don't know. These cars don't have a steering wheel. They don't have brakes. I mean, you want to get in a car, and I'm a computer programmer. I don't want to depend on a computer program. I want to have a steering wheel. I want to have a brake, you know.
But Mark, you know, that would prevent. Well, you know, I have a number of friends who are in their 80s, and trust me, it would be much safer for everyone on the road if those ladies could just get in a car and punch home. You know, there are people that this would be very appropriate for.
Right, as long as they don't restrict our freedom. You know,
yes, but you know something? As soon as something like that comes out, guys like you who are techies will find a way around it.
Yeah, but man, then you know, then you have to go through the whole deal of hacking into your car and all that. But that concerns me. The other thing that's coming out that concerns me are the Google brain implants. I don't know if you've heard of those yet.
No, but I'm not surprised.
Right. What they want to do is they'll drill a hole in your head for you and put a chip in there and allow you to Google just by thinking.
I don't know. I think I'd rather have a handheld chip than a head-held one.
Because
I mean, isn't that the mark of the beast and things like that, putting a chip in you? I mean, isn't that another way of getting a chip in you to control you?
Of course. I mean, that whole technology can be so abused, you know, letting someone drill into your skull. And first of all, something may go wrong and they could damage your brain for life. And B, even if everything goes quote-unquote correct, once that chip's in you, who knows what the government can do to your mind and to your thought processes and how they can control you.
Not only that, but, I mean, my computer every now and then gets a virus. And
sure.
I mean, you know, I'm just fine, but my chip has a virus, so I'm going to be down for a couple of days. That's ridiculous.
So, I mean, this weird dystopic world that we're heading into is very concerning, very, very concerning. And it's just
although crazy. I have to tell you, the ability to research on the Internet is just phenomenal. I mean, there's so much information out there. And, I mean, I just took down almost all of the, I had 16 websites between Patrick and I, and I've just taken them all down.
16?
Because 16, I had 16.
That's expensive, isn't it?
No, it wasn't too expensive, actually, but Patrick was a fanatic, and you know, if he had a website, he wanted to have the com.org. So, you know, a lot of times there were three sites purchased for one website. But, you know, his books all had websites. That's silly. We don't need that. They can buy the book. And, you know, I mean, really. but even his website, Bible UFO, is going to be coming down shortly because he hadn't added to it for almost a decade, and all of the material on it is in his books. So I think I'm paring it down to actually just BarbaraDeLong.com because that's current, and it's something I am constantly adding to. So, you know.
Just one suggestion on that Bible UFO site, which that is a really good site.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you could, I don't know if you have a webmaster or if you can do it yourself. If you could take that, all the information in that site and kind of move it to some link off your site or something, because that's a very important site, I think.
It is, however, you know, if you actually look at it, all of the information on it are in his three books.
I know, but people don't read books. I do, you do, but most people don't read books anymore.
But they're in e-books. And if anybody panics, I will put out there something that I just discovered, which means it's been out there for a very long time, and I'm the last person on earth to discover it. But have you ever heard of the Wayback Machine?
I have heard of that. I've heard of that, but I've not used it.
If you go to the Wayback Machine, if you go to the Wayback thing, you can type in any website, and it will not only pull it up, but it will show the entire website to you.
Wow.
And well, so if anybody
that's your
really...
call. That's your call, you know. But I'm just concerned that like a lot of these researchers that are no longer in the flesh right now, their material is just really, really important. And I know it's in the books.
Well, it's in ebook too. So
okay.
It's out there. And his website was done in Front Page. And so there's no way actually for me to fix it or whatever.
I see.
The Bible stuff, all of the Bible stuff is in his three books.
Right.
The UFO stuff, most of it is now on my website.
Okay.
The Secrets of the Stones is on my website.
Okay.
The giant material is on my website, even expanded. So those things that are relevant that I can speak on with authority are on my website.
You know, it's so weird for me because in some ways I'm relatively new to this whole thing. I started my first radio show in 2010 when I decided to do something. I was so motivated by this stuff, I just had to do something. And I've gotten to know these researchers like Philip Coppens, for example, who has died, which I'm still kind of in shock about that. And another researcher who probably the people that have listened to my show remember, Dr. Jack Pruitt.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Did you ever talk to him?
I didn't talk to him. But he, you know, same genre.
Yeah, same genre. He had a great book. I've still got it up here somewhere in my shelf. The Grandest Deception by Dr. Jack Pruitt. I did several shows on that, and probably the biggest YouTube following I ever got on a show was like 60 or something thousand people. Someone had posted that show that I did on Blog Talk up on YouTube, and I think his information resonated with a lot of people. And he's gone too. You know, it was just so weird, Barbara, because I was having this dialogue back and forth with him, and then, you know, I just didn't hear back from him anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, oh, yeah, but Patrick said that his work here was done. He said that when he started with his website and his material and his philosophy and his theory, that he was, you know, just a single voice talking in the wilderness, and now everybody agreed with him, and everybody was citing his material.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of the other guys that were on Ancient Aliens had called him and asked him if they could use his material, and of course he always said yes.
Mm-hmm.
So it was sort of like, you know, I said, I realize it's not any fun anymore when everyone agrees with you, but that's no reason to die. And you know, he said, well, it's kind of fait accompli here. And then when he was on Ancient Aliens, he said, you know, I just can't think of anything better. I said, well, I can think of a couple things. And he passed away 2-3 weeks after he was filmed for Ancient Aliens. So he had a photographic memory. So when he told you a number, when he told you a percentage, it was accurate.
Right.
And having that kind of a memory for the material that he covered was phenomenal. But it's all out there. And you know, it's kind of like a lot on his website, a lot of the links don't work anymore. So I've gone through it with a fine-tooth comb 6 or 8 or 10 times. And, you know, those things that I can speak of and you know, feel comfortable with, I have copied out and I will save and I will utilize at some point in time. And the other stuff that everybody is quoting and you know, grabbing, all in his books. His books are on ebook. His books are, you know, they can be gotten all over the place. So, you know, taking it down is not something I relish. But the material there are connections that are missing. There are links that are missing. And I don't want it to, you know, get so broken that people just don't go to it because nothing works. So you're right. It's a tough call.
But, yeah.
However, you know, his voice, his material is out there. And it's interesting. I'm going to be doing an interview with a guy named, and actually, I don't know if you know this guy, but you might want to, you know, if you need his information, I'll give it to you. His name is Michael J. Carter, and he's written a book called Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials, and the Holy Bible.
I'm interviewing him Saturday night.
I got him Tuesday. the cool thing about it is he cites Patrick in his book, which I thought was fabulous. And then when I talked to him, turns out we went to the same college. And we studied at the same metaphysical seminary. And so
really?
Oh yeah, there were a lot of synchronicities, so I'm looking forward to talking to him. And you know, his book looks fascinating. There's another one. I don't know if you have.
I've done several shows with Michael on Blog Talk, just kind of roundtable type things.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very, very interesting guy. One thing that I have stole from him that I think is just fascinating, he said Jehovah was an ET with anger management issues, which I thought just hilarious.
Have you spoken with Fritz Zimmerman?
No, I haven't. I don't know about him at all.
That's the Nephilim Chronicles.
Okay.
Which looks interesting as well. So I'm finding a lot of these people are finding me, strangely.
Well, that's good. Very good.
Yeah.
Very, very good. And you probably have this same issue. Once you start researching this stuff, it takes you down so many avenues and side streets and alleys, and pretty soon your show, which you thought was going to be about A, turned out to be actually about B, and then you're going to have to go back to do a show about A because you got off on a tangent.
And the thing that keeps getting me is, with all of these UFO stuff and the Bible stuff, which I am partially okay with, I still keep getting drawn back to the Emerald Tablet stuff, which goes beyond this. So I'm trying to make time to really get into the Emerald Tablet material so that I can kind of put it in, get some sort of insight into, people get to the point where, okay, they were extraterrestrials and therefore they are the top of the pack and everything. And I keep saying, no, they're just another rung in the ladder. They are not the top of the ladder. There's something beyond them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I want to be looking.
Well, it's very interesting that you say that, because the Meyer material talks about seven stages of human evolution. And the sixth stage, they say we transition into a form that's half spiritual, half material. And that sixth stage lasts billions of years. And then we transition into a purely spiritual stage in the seventh stage. And that also lasts billions of years. And then we merge back into creation. So I think you're right. There's levels above even this material level.
Yeah, that's where I'm doing a spiritual development circle, and I'm having trouble explaining to people that it's not just here and then spirit. It goes beyond that, and they are having great trouble understanding that there's a difference between your personality, which is just of this lifetime, and your spirit, which is of thousands of lifetimes. So
right, that's so true, Barbara. That is so true. I'm so glad you identified that, because when you come back as a different personality.
Absolutely, and. Spirits, were obviously not created for it's not a one-shot deal. Your personality, however, is, and it's how you are receiving information, and your character is how you're receiving information, and it's sometimes you have to be. Sometimes we have all come back as really evil, nasty people, but that's because we had to gather that information as well. And one of the reasons we don't remember all of our past lives is we would either be blown away by the horrendous things we've done, or our egos would get so pumped up by the phenomenal things we've done that we wouldn't be able to have focus on the lifetime at hand.
Right. You're totally in agreement with the Meyer material there. But I think in our later incarnations, after we develop up to a certain point, I think we have more and more recall
uh-huh.
of those when we can handle it. But I think you're so right in that we have many, many predecessor personalities, and each time we reincarnate, we get a new personality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we get inspiration from those predecessor personalities and even impulses from the Akashic records.
Oh, absolutely. So, and that does help us to evolve the character, the personality of the lifetime that we're presently in. I mean, the past certainly has input and influence, but you know, it's never the same. I mean, I could come back as, you know, a burly football player next time.
Yeah.
You know, hope not, but I could, you know.
I mean, you're right. It gets kind of weird, doesn't it?
Yes, it gets very weird. I mean, I just, you know, I think of Patrick and how, you know, he was in the Navy and he, you know, he was a very authoritative figure. And all I could think of is, you know, I bet in past lifetime you were a ballet dancer or something, you know.
Well, it's funny. Once you become kind of aware of this kind of thing and you study it more and more and then you interact with people.
Mm-hmm.
And people, I mean, I know of women that I think are typically male when they reincarnate, particularly in the software industry. I mean, I don't mean that in a negative way. But yeah, I can think of, I'm not going to say any names, of course, but I can think of a woman right now who I'm pretty darn sure that most of her reincarnations were male.
Well, and quite possibly, and I think sometimes when the influence of the past lifetime has been so strongly one sex or another, when it has been a really imposing strength of input, that may well transfer into this lifetime, and the person may have, you know, be gay. Because
sure.
the power of the last lifetime was so profound that those feelings and those characteristics are still there within the spirit.
Oh. Yeah, I totally agree with you. But I don't relish the idea of coming back as a woman, but I guess it's going to happen at some point. Probably has happened already.
Well, that's your personality. Your spirit, your spirit's androgynous. Your spirit doesn't really care.
I know. And, you know, here's another thing. I don't know if you have this point of view or not. I don't think spirits are evil. I think they're neutral.
I agree.
That personality may have been evil.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think the spirit of Adolf Hitler probably isn't evil.
No, and probably very horrified with what the lesson of that lifetime was. Yeah, sure. You know, it was like, holy crap, I have that much karmic debt that I incurred. I'm never going back there. You know, I was kidding around with somebody and we were talking about how, you know, as the spirits get ready to reincarnate, you know, there's a process they go through and I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I jokingly say you go to the reincarnation office and you put in for another tour of duty down on Earth. And we were talking about how you wonder if the spirits kind of get together to have a beer before they go to sign in for another tour, and they sit around saying, well, I'm not going to be your wife next time because you stank this time. and you know, or I'm going to make sure that when I check the boxes for the things I want to work on, I don't check them all and be that ambitious because it sucked last time. I mean, I do think that our spirits have to have senses of humor, too.
There is a book you may enjoy. It's called Journey of Souls by Michael Newton, Ph.D., and it's called A Case Study of Life Between Lives, and he regressed, I think, I don't know if it was 1,000 people. He was a psychologist, and he was amazed because these people had incredible detailed memories of their, not only their past life, but the life between lives, you know, in the spiritual realm.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to take it with a grain of salt and see how much of it resonates with you. But I got through about the first 170 pages or so, and then I kind of got off on something else. But what he did was document his conversations with these people as they were, you know, hypnotized or whatever, and you would get these very interesting, you know, what they had done in the past life and why this past life, you know, like for example, just one guy was in World War I and he was bayoneted.
Oh.
And he was bayoneted in the stomach and killed. And he constantly in the following life had issues with his stomach all the time, and what came out was the story of him, you know, being in a trench in World War I, and actually he was killed in that way. So I don't know, take it with a grain of salt or whatever, but it's certainly fascinating stuff.
It is. I did a spirit circle not too long ago, and one of the women there, I looked at her and I said, oh my God, your feet must hurt you all the time. And she said, they do. And I said, that's because you had a Chinese incarnation where your feet were bound. And
oh my
she
God.
And it was a pain that she said, they say there's nothing wrong. And I said, it's just your feet are remembering.
Weird.
Oh, yeah. No, it's amazing, too, when I do spirit circles, often I get the spirits of people that have just crossed over. And it's not as, at least with me and connecting with them, it's not as spiritual as they become later on. And this one guy, he had just crossed over possibly maybe a month earlier, and his wife was there, and she said, does he have a message for me? And I said, he does, but I'm not sure it's what you want to hear. And she said, what is it? And I said, he's saying, holy crap, Marion, I saw Elvis. He really is dead. And
that's funny.
And, you know, oftentimes you get that kind of reaction. I mean, afterwards they get philosophical after they kind of mellow out a little bit. But, it's an amazing adventure. And the other side is fun. I mean, it's not clouds and chanting and, you know, celestial music. It's another place altogether, and it's amazing.
I wanted to, before I forget about it, bring back up, you know, we were just on Skype there a second, and I was telling you about Kevin Annett, who is one of my guests. He has a website. It's called, let me try to remember here. Well, he has a kevinannett.com, but he has another website. And he was a kind of a pastor/priest. He was working in Canada, and he found out that there was a pedophile ring in his own congregation. And then when he tried to kind of fix the problem, let's say, they ended up, of course, fixing him and booting him out. And then he created this organization called ITCCS, the International Tribunal into the Crimes of the Church. And he found this there's a satanic child sacrifice ring somewhere in Canada.
Oh, wow.
And anyway, I think the powers that be are about to put him in prison. He says, impending Irish arrest and extradition of Kevin Anna on the verge of the Tuam killing inquiry, an urgent bulletin from the International Tribunal into the crimes of church and state and its direct action unit in Ireland. The Irish government has agreed to extradite Kevin Anna to England to face imprisonment when he arrives in Ireland this weekend, according to the information obtained through our sources in Ireland's National Police, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it goes on for quite some time here. His website is www.itccs.org. That's his other website. And I guess they're going to try to silence him. It was so funny because I had him on the first time, and then the second time, we couldn't make Skype connection, we couldn't get anything to work, and he would call in and he would just get nothing, and so mm-hmm. we were being messed with there. So
it happens.
Oh, it does happen. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there to all the listeners as well. You know, it's we gotta straighten things up in this world and do it quick.
Well, you know that old adage, you know, the people used to joke about Big Brother is watching. Count on it.
Yeah.
It's happening. Our cell phones are getting tracked. Our internet is getting tracked. It's really every now that the last show that last roundtable we were on.
Yeah.
Kosal got into some stuff that was towards the end. He was fascinating right up to the very end. Then he went off on his own tangent there, and all I could think of was, oh, my. Oh, gee, Mark may have a knock on his door any day now.
Well, I think there's a line you don't cross in all of this. And mm-hmm. we came right up to the edge of it there.
You think?
You know, and I don't even like to go here, but I think Kosal is right. Dick Cheney did say that the next thing we're gonna see is a nuke going off in the United States. And let's hope.
I hope it's wrong.
Yeah.
But. You know, the only thing I can think of that if somebody did that it makes part of the U.S. Not worth, you know, coming over and taking over. So it doesn't make sense, although there are crazy people out there that can't be rationalized with, but... I would say that the fact that one hasn't gone off as a weapon since we dropped them in 45, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a little embarrassing that we're the only country in the world that has set off atomic bombs against another people. So
I have another guest. Suddenly I'm forgetting his name right now, who told me, now this is a humbling thought, that the Germans had the nuke in World mm-hmm. War II before we did, but they wouldn't use it because they were concerned about the destruction that might happen to the genetics of the people of Earth, and they were concerned that it would just mess up that Aryan bloodline, that Aryan.
Well, Hitler was in love with Great Britain. He didn't want anything to destroy, yeah, he bombed the heck out of it, but he didn't want the island to be hurt or damaged.
Really?
So, yeah, no, he liked England. He wanted them to be an ally. Well, you know, and the Duke of Windsor was in league with him too. The king that abdicated, he was definitely into Hitler's philosophies. He really liked him a lot. So, yeah, Hitler didn't want to destroy England. He did a pretty good job of battering it. But, yeah, but they had, well, when we took all of their missile scientists and put them, you know, to work for us, who was it? The guy, Werner von Braun.
Yeah.
When he was asked, how did they get all of this technology, his comment was, we had help from above, those up above. So they were using alien technology. And when you look at all of our missiles today, our missiles are based on the Nazi stuff. And our missile program.
I think Werner von Braun's mentor, Hermann Oberth, said, we have had help from people from other worlds. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's so interesting you bring that up, because just this week, just to show you how absurd and ridiculous this whole war thing really, really is, we have been advancing the F-16 fighter plane for years and years and years, and improving it every year. And I think it's like one of the greatest fighter planes in the world, and we could go off on a whole tangent, and I won't bore the listeners with why it's so good and why I think it's even better than the fighters, top-of-the-line fighters we just came out with, the F-22 and the F-35. Anyway, we had developed a fighter, a recent F-16 for Israel, and they use it. It's called the F-16I or something like that. Well, Barbara, listen to this. Now, since we're quote-unquote friends with Iraq, we just sold that same release of the F-16 to the Iraqis. What a joke. You know what I'm saying? This whole idea of war is for national security and all this. I mean, it's just a big racket to make money. When you sell people that you've just been fighting with a couple months ago, they're your best fighter plane. I mean, what a joke. I'm sorry, I'm ranting.
Well, no, I don't think that we sold them our best fighter plane. We sold them I don't think we would have sold our best to anybody. We have to have one that's even better now, because not stupid. And
well, yeah, but let me say this. The F-22 and the F-35 aren't our best. We have something so, you know, we've probably talked about this before, the secret space program and all that.
Uh-huh.
But what is kind of absurd about this in the world of known technology, it's so incestuous. I mean, it's absurd, you know. I mean, when we're giving these very advanced technologies to these countries that were quote allegedly at war against, or we were allegedly at war with Iraq, you know, even several months ago, it's just all so absurd. I'm sorry, I'm ranting.
Well, look at what we did. We were sure that there were weapons of mass destruction. And so we went in looking for them. Do you know why we were so sure there were weapons of mass destruction?
Because we probably sold them to them, right?
Sold it to them. You know, they had the invoice. They knew that they were there. Unfortunately, by the time they got there, they had already used it on their own people. So, you know, it wasn't there anymore. But no, that's the only reason they were so positive there were weapons of mass destruction. We sold them to them.
Well, one of the things I've been studying, trying to understand right now, is this whole thing in the Ukraine. Because the Ukraine is very interesting. Here you've got this Texas-sized country wedged between Russia and Europe. And it was part of the Soviet Union until 1991. And then I guess it became its own country. Uh-huh. And it has a lot of the same weapons that the Russians do.
Uh-huh.
So this is bad news. I mean, we're talking about two powerful, powerful countries with high-tech weapons going head-to-head in it's a conventional warfare right now, and hopefully it won't become worse. But this is very, very serious. I don't know if you've taken any of the time to watch any of these YouTube's videos where they have the live fighting going on. It's totally insane, Barbara.
Well, and I don't see, I don't understand. You know, they used to have, you know, a representative for each warring nation, and they let those guys duke it out. I mean, it just seems to me that there has to be a better way to resolve our differences and difficulties. And it doesn't appear that while there are better ways, it doesn't seem like the governments want to do that. It feels like the governments really want to have war because that's where they make their money.
Oh, yeah, you're right. And that's what I was kind of getting to. And it gets complicated. And it does. I mean, because the southern part of the Ukraine, they call Crimea. Mm-hmm. And this is a very valuable area. And for one reason or another, the Russians annexed/invaded Crimea in March. So this is a very complex political situation going on over there. And boy, I just hope we don't decide to get our military involved in this.
Of course we will. I mean, come on. Unfortunately, we have become a nation of mercenaries. And invaders. I would love to, you know, I'm into genealogy, I'm into family history and all of that stuff, and I know that my ancestors would just have conniption fits over what this country is doing. My grandfather was a politician, and he would be outraged at what this government is doing. I mean, this is no longer the country that was fought for in the 1700s. It just isn't.
No, it is.
And now I will agree that our forefathers were deists. They weren't as pure as the driven snow as we would like to think they were. However, I don't think they ever would have done half the stuff this country is doing today. And you know, it's not. You know, I get very nostalgic when I see the flag raised and I hear pomp and circumstance and I see these guys, you know, marching off to war for the First World War, the Second World War, and even Vietnam. But, you know, after that, we're sending our guys in because of oil fields, and we're sending our guys in to do black ops. And while we're doing all of this, they tell us it's for democracy, but we don't have any right to impose our form of government on any other country. We don't have the right to do that. And yet, that's what we're doing. I don't understand why we're getting away with it, to tell you the truth.
One of the interviews I saw last night, and I think I did make a clip of this, was a journalist, and he had gotten into Ukraine going on a train, and he was interviewing some of the soldiers on the side of the Ukraine side. And they had subtitles so I could understand what they were saying. And the interviewer was talking to, I think the guy was either a captain or a major in the Ukrainian army, who was of Russian descent, and he formally, I guess, was a Russian, you know, because the Ukraine became independent in 1991, and what the journalist was asking him is, do you feel bad against, you're essentially fighting against your own ethnic people here, the Russians, mm-hmm. and what this fellow said was, yeah, in a way I do, but he said that if someone is invading your home, you don't care what ethnicity they are. They're a criminal. You just want to stop them. So it's a very complicated situation. And I look at these two people, the Ukrainians and the Russians, and I respect both of them. And the last thing I want to see is these two great nations destroy each other. It's just...
But how do you stop what's going on?
I haven't got that to that point yet. I'm still working on it.
it's sort of like, do you revert it back to 50 years or 100 years or 300 years or 500 years? How far back do you go to say what is fair and what is good? Because, you know, the lines of demarcation change with every generation just about. And, you know, look at Israel, for heaven's sakes. If you take them back far enough, they don't exist, yet they have a right, you know. Mm-hmm. But did we have a right to carve that country up like we did? And I think the answer is no, we didn't. But they needed a place to go. I understand that. But you took it away from somebody else who didn't do anything wrong, you know.
Right.
And yet they're being punished. Now, why did we pick there? Why didn't we go to the middle of, I don't know, Africa or South America, carve out a whole bunch of jungle and say, go at it, guys. Create whatever is right for you. But then who are we to tell them what they should have created? You know, we don't like what you created, so we're going to take it away from you now. That's not fair and right either.
Yeah, I'm still at the point with the whole Ukrainian situation and Russian situation and the whole Crimea, which is, you know, the southern part of the Ukraine. It used to be part of the Ukraine, and now I guess the Russians are in there now. I'm still trying to form an opinion, one way or another. There's just so much information here that I'm trying to absorb, and it just seems to me that at the highest level, it's, again, two really fantastic groups of people. The Ukrainians, I mean, they're intelligent, hardworking people, and the Russian, intelligent, hardworking people.
Uh-huh.
And we don't, you know, the last thing we need is to those two to destroy each other. We need more people like the Ukrainians and the Russians in the world. They don't need to be destroying each other. There's got to be some way to resolve this, because, Barbara, if you look at these YouTubes, these guys are using serious weapons. I mean, you just watch the whole squadrons of helicopters flying over and these giant rockets that are being shot off and the MiGs flying over, and then the guys going through the forests with the AK-47s and the heavy tanks, and this is serious, serious stuff here. You know, these guys aren't playing. These guys are very serious.
And what are they doing? They're killing other people for what? I mean, this is what gets me. They're killing people because these people want to have a life too. I mean, they're both right.
Yeah, so that's the part I'm still struggling with, trying to understand the motivations. And, well, it's almost like, think if in the future, say in 2020, Texas decides they want to be their own nation. They have the right to do that, I think. You know,
yeah,
if you
they
go
do.
By so what if Texas becomes its own nation, and, you know, let's say in 2025, our federal government goes in and says, wait a minute, we say we really own the panhandle of Texas or some part of it, Austin, I don't know. So they go in and they invade part of Texas and take a part of that over. Now, that's kind of an analogy to what's going on over here. Do you then think that Russia and NATO should come over here and defend Texas, or I don't like that idea. I don't like any of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you make a very good point. I mean, it could happen. I think in order to secede, they have to have a certain amount of the population that agrees, and in order for that to happen, it would be difficult, not impossible, but difficult. So, and when Obama was elected, there were a number of states that threatened secession, and I think they're still threatening it.
We're not that far from what's going on in the Ukraine.
No.
And the Henoch prophecies, the Billy Meyer Henoch prophecies, Contact 215, say we could. They're prophecies. Prophecies are a maybe. Predictions are a yes. They say in the United States we could have two civil wars, and that would break up the U.S. into five different zones.
Well, I could see it. I mean, come on, we've already had one civil war.
Yeah.
And I could see the possibility of another one. It's just a matter of, you know, how far does the federal government want to push us? And it will be the federal government pushing us. It won't be over something simple. It'll be a big deal. But they can get the populace. I wrote once, if we slumber, they will plunder. And I think that's exactly what's happened. And I think that people are waking up, and the more they wake up, the more angry they're going to get, and the more angry they get, the more dangerous everything becomes.
Mm-hmm. So you were saying, if we slumber, they will plunder, meaning the governments will plunder the people?
Yep. You know, if we don't object, they just keep going. And you know, the government now is so controlled by people who don't even follow what they were elected to do.
Oh,
that
I know.
You know, it does feel to me, and I do feel that there is great potential for not an overthrow of the government, but a reorganization of the government. I think very strongly that the office of president is going to be done away with at one point in time. And
I agree with you. Sorry to interrupt. The way it's going now, the office of the presidency needs to be done away with.
Well, I think it needs to be. I think from what I see, and I'm not as knowledgeable in everything as I would like to be, but the Constitution does allow for the fact that if the government isn't working, reorganize it, do away with it, you know, and start from scratch, do it again. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think we have come to a point in time where, come on, these guys have voted themselves so much power that it's not fair. It's just not equitable, and it's not fair. I mean, for a man to serve two terms and then be able to get his salary for the rest of his life is ridiculous.
Oh, my Lord. I'm so glad you bring that up. I had totally forgotten about that. He's going to get that salary for the rest of his life?
Not only Obama, but it's either the Senate or the House. I think it's the Senate. If they serve two terms, they get their salary for the rest of their life.
Barbara, you know what this reminds me of?
What?
Not the televangelists. Are you familiar with how rich some of these guys are?
Oh yeah.
I wasn't until recently. These guys are wealthy beyond, you know, way beyond our presidents.
Oh, my God, yes. I mean, who was it that air-conditioned their doghouse? somebody did. I can't remember. All I could think of was, I'm sweating and their dogs have air conditioning. This doesn't seem right.
Kenneth Copeland recently purchased a $20 million Learjet. Now, that may come no surprise to you, but I was blown away by that.
Well, you know, in theory, their ministry is to help people, and I don't understand how they think. It's, you know, come on, the televangelists, let's go back to the Catholic Church. They say they don't have money. That's bullshit. And sorry, And there are so many people in this world starving and homeless and in such horrible straits, and yet they are hoarding money and information, and you know, the church is just another corporate entity, our government. I mean, all they have to do is legalize marijuana and tax it, and our federal debt is gone.
Wow. Think of that.
That's all they have to do.
Can I clip? I think you'll get a kick out of this on Kenneth Copeland.
Sure.
Let me play this clip. I think the listeners will enjoy this too.
Every year, televangelists attract more than believers. They draw hundreds of millions of dollars from all around the world. All of it is tax exempt, but should it be? Senator Charles Grassley is investigating six top TV preachers. And tonight, our chief investigative correspondent, Armin Katayan, has a hard look at one of them, Kenneth Copeland, the so-called godfather of prosperity gospel.
To live in the Garden of Eden, hallelujah!
In one TV sermon after another,
somebody shout amen!
Kenneth Copeland and wife Gloria implore viewers to sow the seeds of their faith by following God's word and donating dollars, promising a hundredfold return in happiness and wealth.
It's a bottom line business.
This former ministry employee who feared being identified answered hundreds of prayer requests a day, most sent in with donations, before quitting, feeling betrayed by Copeland's gospel of prosperity.
I receive it!
He is the recipient of the prosperity message.
So when he's preaching health and wealth,
he's filling that bottom line on his business.
That's why Senate investigators are digging into whether ministry resources are being diverted into an array of for-profit companies tied to the Copelands. Cattle, horses, aviation, real estate development, and gas and oil wells, to name but a few. Michael Hoover, who worked for the Kenneth Copeland Ministries for 5 years, quit in 2005 over disagreements with the church. He is one of three former employees who told CBS News they witnessed other employees doing work on behalf of for-profit businesses tied to the Copeland family.
I believe that they were using a lot of the ministry's assets for personal businesses.
The nonprofit activity and the for-profit activity are so intertwined that you can't separate them.
A two-month CBS News investigation, including interviews with nearly a dozen former Copeland employees, raises serious questions about the Copelands' religious empire. Beginning with this lavish lakefront home, all 18,000 square feet of it, and a fleet of private planes, all paid for by the ministry.
The Lord spoke to me and said, you believe for a citation 10 right now.
Copeland got what he wanted. That's the $20 million jet right there parked at the ministry-owned airport, one of four planes owned by the church.
It will never ever be used for anything other than what is becoming to you, Lord Jesus.
But that's not what happened. CBS News has learned he used this ministry jet and another to fly to and from Colorado three times in 2007, the site of frequent Copeland family vacations. The ministry claims that in rare instances that jets or employees are used for personal business, the church is reimbursed.
You are not created for poverty.
Churches are not required to file tax forms or make their finances public. The ministry, which says it does everything by the book, has refused to answer key questions about its finances raised by Senate investigators.
We answered them. We gave them a several-page lesson on no.
Kenneth Copeland refused repeated interview requests by CBS News. When we went to ministry headquarters near Fort Worth, Texas, we were turned away.
There's no way I can see him right now. You sure?
If Senator Charles Grassley doesn't get the answers he wants, he may well resort to some words of his own in the form of a Senate subpoena. Armin Katayan, CBS News, Newark, Texas.
Barbara, did you hear that? Barbara, did you hear that when it said that he gets hundreds of millions of dollars tax-free, and then you hear Kenneth Copeland shout amen, and then you hear about his 18,000-square-foot home and that the Lord spoke to him to buy that $20 million Learjet? What do you think of all that?
Who was it in Colorado that went on a hunger strike until somebody gave him $1 million and he got the $1 million?
I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, it was, and I can't remember which one it was, but it was one of them. And, you know, he went on a hunger strike for $1 million and somebody coughed up the $1 million for him so he could have another dinner or something. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. And, you know, ministries are wonderful and they do great things, some of them, but not all of them. And unfortunately, you only hear about the bad ones. You don't hear about the really good ones because there are good ones out there. But look at wasn't it, who was it that did the thing in Guyana?
Jonestown?
Yeah. I mean,
the mass suicide?
Yeah. You know,
that wasn't that long ago, was it?
No. I mean, and you know, it's kind of like power, absolute power absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yes, indeed.
It does. It does, and not a good thing. And we should be careful about the kind of power we give to our politicians because it appears that they're running away with it, and that's not what it was meant to do. You know, they're here to serve us, and they're not serving. You know, we're serving them. We're paying their bills, and that's not right.
You know, you have your own show, and you talk on other people's shows. I'm feeling so motivated to talk about all of these things going on. There's so much information to discuss. Are you feeling that motivation too?
Oh, absolutely. But you got to understand, most of my shows are reading shows. There's no way I can. So I use your show.
So your show isn't covering this kind of stuff, right? You're doing readings for people.
Yeah.
Well, that's a totally different genre. That's a completely different thing.
It is. It's totally different. It's a method of service. It's how I give back. And, you know, I think I'm at a place in time here where that's changing too, because it feels to me as though there's so much other information that is so important to be sharing that people aren't paying attention to. So that's why I do the interview shows. And
yeah.
I am absolutely having a wonderful time with those. And you know, the reading shows are something that's important too, because it does give people information. And the spiritual development circle is another. People are out there saying, I'm a psychic, I'm a this, I'm a that, and, you know, they don't have any idea as to what spirituality is, and so I'm trying to at least give them a foundation so they know what they're talking about instead of, you know, declaring they're something that they're not. So, you know.
I think being in the alternative media like we are, it puts you in a very precarious situation because there's so much information that needs to be talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not even being talked about. It makes me feel, I don't know, tired, frustrated, at the same time kind of enthralled to try to cover this kind of stuff and to go over it in more detail. I mean, here's the important, the incredible amount of information that's not being covered right now. And this was published on April 19th, 2013. They found two habitable planets, actually more than two, in the Lyra Vega systems. Now, one of these is called Kepler-62f, which is, it has water, it's in the habitable zone. Another one is what they're calling Kepler-186f. And I wanted to cover these in more detail, and I probably need to do more research on them as well. But, I mean, there are breakthroughs right now in science going on that are just completely getting glossed over with with all the turmoil and the insanity that's going on, and even, even the Ukraine isn't being covered well, I don't think.
No.
I don't even think the Ferguson, Missouri shootings were even covered that well. Did you? I think I sent you a link of the film that covered the second shooting, correct?
Yeah.
Was that shocking or what?
But you know, it's our the public as a whole is just so numb to all
yes.
of this stuff that and the news covers disaster, but then oh gosh, there's another disaster here. You know, that one's old news. You know, we'll move on to the other. The reality is, the first disaster hasn't been taken care of, and there are people still hurting and people still in need, and yet nobody knows about that because the news isn't covering that. It's off to a hurricane or it's off to something else. And you know, my God, the Katrina people still haven't had all of the help they need. And
wow.
And you know, we are so numbed by what we see on the internet and what we see on the news that you know, it's sort of like, oh yeah, that's a disaster. Well, did you see the TV show last night, the reality show on the Gypsy Wives or whatever? And people aren't paying attention to this. They see so much of it, they don't care. And they know they can change the channel and find another disaster. So what's the big deal?
So they're in shock is what you're saying.
I think so. I think it's culture shock, among other things, because we have so much access to so much information that we're overwhelmed by it. And I think the one thing that I kept saying to Patrick over and over again was, okay, so where do I go to find the truth? And you know, his answer was, you just listen to it all and then find the truth in all of that. And it's like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, my government is lying to me. The churches are lying to me. I mean, my politicians are lying to me. So where do you find the truth and not be put in jail?
Well, yeah, that's true. That's very true. I mean, look at Kevin Annett right now. Man, I hope the poor guy doesn't end up in jail.
Look at WikiLeaks. I mean, you know, he's all he did was publicize something that he found. And not all of it is out. And you know, they're after him to kill him and to put him in jail as a traitor and all sorts of stuff. Now, if when the truth is given to the public, a person is prosecuted, that sounds pretty much like a dictatorship to me.
Well, police state. There's a police state rising in the U.S.
For sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And you know, people like you, and I think they'll laugh at me because I, you know, still fly under the colors of a spiritual empath and psychic, even though since Patrick's death, I have become more of a conspiracy person than I hate to admit.
Well, yeah, how can you not become a conspiracy person? If you're a person that's oriented to the truth, you're going to become conspiratorial.
Well, you know, it started with Secrets of the Stones, and then it went into the UFO stuff, and then it went into, you know, I keep finding subjects that have been glossed over because history can't explain them, and it outrages me that just can't they say, I don't know, we're going to look into it, instead of making up stupid, fabricated stuff that unfortunately most of the general public is so numbed that they say, well, of course, that has to be what it was. No, it doesn't. I mean, look at 9/11, where they had the cell phones, where people were given cell phones so they could call and say goodbye. At the altitude those planes were flying, cell phones don't work.
I know.
So, come on.
You really hit on something there, though. The public's numb. They are in some kind of shock state. They can't compute, and they've just decided not to deal with it, I guess.
Well, it's just that every time you seek the truth, you're given another lie. And, you know, they watch it, and did they buy that one? Because if they don't, I got another one that's even better. And, you know, it just is, okay, so what is the truth? You keep digging and digging and digging. Look at these Egyptian caves out in the Grand Canyon. Why are they being kept secret? What's the point to that? I mean,
and
seriously.
If you talk to the normal person on the street about Egyptian caves in the Grand Canyon, you're going to be labeled, you know, a total nut job, right?
The New York Times in 1909 did a huge, huge article on them. New York Times. And the Smithsonian has on exhibit a lot of the gold artifacts that were taken from it. Look at giants. Giants were here. They were part of this country. They were here. They were. It wasn't one or two. It was tribes of them. And they have totally wiped that out too. Now why? What's the big deal? Yes, we have giant DNA. Yes, some people are born with double rows of teeth. Yes, there were giants in this land. Now why? How come history books don't talk? Christopher Columbus, one of the biggest massacre persons around. We have a day celebrating him discovering America, and he was the last person to discover it, not the first.
Did he do massacres?
Yes, he was vicious. He was awful. He killed people for pleasure.
Oh, yes.
He was not a good man. And not only that, not only the fact that he did kill people for pleasure, but he and his crew brought disease in so that they damn near wiped out the whole population of the island they discovered.
That's,
he enslaved people. He sent people back to Spain, you know, as slaves. Oh, he was awful. He was not a nice man.
Well,
Google it. It's out there. Google. You know, while we still have an internet that isn't too pleased, Google it. It's out there.
Well, and that's the other thing is I don't know if you. I find a lot of my information on YouTube, and it's a good source of information, but it appears now, and we've got about 2 minutes left here, it appears now that it's being polluted with fake gunk. Have you noticed that? Are you seeing that?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Weird accounts that look all artificial and strange, they're all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
You know, I'm sure glad we tested your Skype out today. Thank you. This has given me a great opportunity to vent my spleen here.
Well, we've got about 2 minutes left. Barbara, why don't you tell everybody, since we kind of had an interview anyway, tell everybody about your book and your website and your radio show.
Okay, book is Whispers of Spiritual Wisdom. Website, don't go looking for it till tomorrow. It'll be completely updated and gorgeous. It's www.barbaradelong.com. My radio show is Nightlight, and I do a reading show, and I do an interview show, and I strongly urge you to listen to the interview shows. They're fabulous. And, you know, if you want to – actually, I won't even let people ask questions on the reading show anymore. I just say I'm going to give you what I get, and I hope it answers your question. I won't let them ask stupid questions anymore.
Good for you. When do you want to try to do another ancient monolithic type show? Maybe next month? Do you think you could do one of those?
Oh, I can do it anytime you want, but I would really love to do more research on this Egypt connection and I'd like to hear what Kosal has to say about the Egypt people in the Grand Canyon. For the most part, I'm fascinated by his information, some of it.
Yeah, I know. He's a lot of fun. Anyway,
yeah.
Barbara, thanks a bunch. We'll talk later.
Okie doke. Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
You too.